Books and Baddies.
Books and Baddies,
a reader's podcast for hotties who read hot books.
From YA slow burns to all-out monster fucking,
join us as we break down shame,
embrace sexuality,
chase romance butterflies,
and find joy in the literature that calls hauntingly to us.
If you were that kid reading in the back of the classroom,
this podcast is for you.
All right, before we get too spooktacular, should we introduce ourselves?
Yeah, Halloweeny roll call. Hi, Lindsay. I just started Artificial Wisdom by Thomas R. Weaver. I'm like two chapters in. And I'm also slowly going through You Are Here, Poetry in the Natural World, compiled by poet laureate Ada Limón.
Ooh. I am Tiff, and I just started up Thrown in the Dark by A.K. Caggiano? At the behest of Kelsey. It's really silly and delightful and cute and romantic. And I had just come off like a long doorstopper fantasy, and I needed something that was not that. So this is delightful, and I'm having a great time.
Yay! When I first read it, I think Tiff, you were the first person I texted, and I was like, this book is made for you.
Yeah.
Made for you.
Exactly.
So I'm really excited for you. Okay. Hi, I'm Kelsey, if you didn't guess. Right now, I'm reading Leather and Lark by Bryn Weaver. It's a sequel in the Butcher and the Blackbird universe, which I might talk about later. I just felt like a serial killer romance was fitting for our spooky episode, so I'm kind of wetting the palate in anticipation.
Anticipation. Another great Halloween tradition.
Mm-hmm, true. Truly.
Hey, hi, hello. I am Crossland. Cross or whoever, and I just finished We Are the Dead by Mike Shackle. I'm rereading Best of Cold by Joe Abercrombie for Words and Whiskey, and also I should probably start American Queen by Sierra Simone again, considering I need to read a new book.
Fucking should, Cross.
How many times have you started?
Have we reached the 2-year mark? I mean,
just once.
Yeah, when we hit Christmas, it'll be 2 calendar years.
I got like 70% of the way through. I just like left it and like didn't think about it for a while.
Skill issue.
And then it just sat there.
Skill issue.
I'll come back.
Amazing.
Oh, I love it.
Skill issue.
I love it.
That's amazing. Well, if you haven't noticed, if you haven't looked outside your window or gone outside, or maybe you live in the tropics where it's just nice all the time, spooky season is upon us. It is time for leaves and cute outfits and sweaters and pumpkins and ghosties and wearing little costumes and just being generally autumnal and cute. Whether you're a little spooky slut, whether you're a little autumnal babe, whether you're a pumpkin spice latte bitch, all are welcome. But we're here to talk about some spooky books. When we first started talking about this episode and getting ready to record, I was like, oh, spooky books, that'll be easy. You just, you know, you Google Halloween books and here's a big list. And then it turned out it was so much more than that and deeper than that, and I'm really excited for this discussion today. So to kick it off, what are spooky books? How are we defining spooky? What is the spooky playground we're playing on today? Any thoughts?
I've got you. I've got some thoughts. I'm a thought with thoughts.
Truly.
Also, I must say I'm a pumpkin spice latte bitch. I just love that moniker so fucking good. I feel like for me, my interpretation of spooky books are books that have like scary elements but aren't terrifying. Like they have the vibes of spooky season, but they don't have to be like all out fear horrifying. Now those are spooky books too, but I just mean that the scale of spookiness stretches into the more like cozy end of the spectrum as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so like way more. A lot of the things that we're going to talk about have to do more with like atmosphere and vibes. There's some like supernatural elements and psychological tension, but like not the have no fear, baby baddies, for there are many weenies amongst the baddies. And we will mostly be focusing on weenie friendly horror and spooky things because That's the crew we're here with today.
Don't worry, if you are a horror whore or a horror ho, yes, like my got you. I mean, this girl has read some crazy shit. I think about my friend Rachel who listens. Hi, Rachel. Hope you're doing well. Tiff's got some recommendations for you. So get excited. We're spreading the full width of the spooky spectrum. I'm also a weenie, but maybe slightly less of a weenie than I thought I was as we went through this episode. So I was curious when we were thinking about this, you know, we're talking about things that are pretty atmospheric. Are things like dark academia spooky books? Are dark romance spooky books? Are those included in our definition of spooky and spooky season?
I vote yes. I feel like even if it's like a Venn diagram, like there's crossover with other genres, I absolutely feel like dark academia hits so hard in the fall. Like it's got the vibes. It's feeling it. And like dark romance and monster romance. Yes, I know we've discussed in previous episodes, but as our resident monster fucker, I'm never going to shut up about it. So I think those also fit into the same kind of genre of these spooky books. But I think it's like there are elements in them that work within this genre. So yes, I vote yes.
I think to a certain extent, yes. I think especially for using the word spooky, so like vaguely scary, like not scary, but like has tension, sure. I don't think that these things qualify under like scary, or like they're pretty light on the spookometer, you know? Like for a jack-o'-lantern, this is like a smiling, happy jack-o'-lantern with a silly little face.
Not one with a big scary goblin on it.
No. Yeah. Exactly.
I wonder if we should come up with some sort of like leaf rating system, you know, if a book has a significant portion of its pages having to do with walking across a leafy orange autumnal college campus, it is officially dark academia and therefore spooky light.
I love the leafometer. And then I feel like some of the books Tiff reads are just like crusty, rotten leaves that have been there all season, like
in a cemetery at night.
Black and sludgy in the dirt. Yeah. But yes.
I love that.
Like maybe on the far other side, it's just like there's a little orange on the end.
It's a little colder. It's like 72 out.
I could wear a sweatshirt if I choose
to. We kind of touched on this, but I think about, you know, what about like cute spooky, right? Like we think about the book version of the little ceramic ghosts at West Elm, or like the Charlie Brown Great Pumpkin movie, right? Like that could technically be spooky. That's Halloween adjacent. Are we talking about those kinds of books, or are we trying to stick more with the spooky, scary skeletons and not the skeletons that look like they want to give you a big hug?
I think we do them all. Because I'm definitely on the hug side. So that's what I'm going to be bringing to the table. That's what I got for y'all.
I will allow it.
Thanks, Mother. Mother Spooky.
I mean, I do watch The Great Pumpkin every year. And like, it is a lovely fall treat to follow up when you have watched or read something like genuinely terrifying. And you need like a little palate cleanser.
It's so cute.
Mm-hmm.
I remember still being afraid because Halloween-y. Tiff, I'm curious, not to put you on the spot, but what was your first foray into horror? How did you end up? I'm always curious how people end up realizing that they like horror. And I wonder if, you know, maybe for some of us, it's just that we haven't really been fully exposed to it at a young age or at the right age. And so now we're like, no, I can't sleep if I do that.
So, okay. So outing my hashtag religious past a little bit. The first book that I remember reading that was like a little bit scary that I really loved was a Ted Dekker book that was a Ted Dekker and Frank Peretti. And those are two Christian horror thriller authors. And they like collaboratively wrote this book that is called House. And House is about this like haunted, cursed house. And it like does all of these like weird things to the people's heads. And like, it's really interesting because it's like, it's not a Christian scary book in that like there are demons in the house and then we pray and everything is fine. But like, I don't even remember what like the Jesus angle in it was, but like it was something about that book that like there are scenes in it that like I still remember like viscerally thinking about in like fifth grade because it was like a Christian book. So it was like, oh yeah, you can check this out at the library. It's from a Christian author. And then I got it home and my mom was like, this is a scary book. Do you realize this? It literally glows in the dark. Like, are you good?
Ooh, that's how you know it's real.
Yeah. And it was so fun. And I read it a bunch of times and I really enjoyed it. Yeah. So I think that that was probably the first time that I read something scary that like made me want to seek out more spooky things. And then I just have kind of been chasing that high ever since.
We all. Are you a spooky movie person, too? I can't remember.
Yes, I enjoy all things spooky. I think we're going to talk a little bit later about like preferred media for spooky, but I have very like I have hot takes about what is the scariest form of media to consume and enjoy as somebody who reads scary books, plays scary video games, and watches scary movies and TV shows too.
Ooh, exciting. The last thing that I've been sort of thinking about as we've been planning this episode, are mysteries inherently spooky? Like as a genre, are mysteries part of spooky season? I'm not a huge mystery girl. I don't dislike them. I just don't find myself gravitating towards them. But I know a lot of people who really, really are.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good thought starter because I definitely am way more interested and knowledgeable in mysteries than I am in scary, in the scary vein of things. Like Hercule Poirot, the show from the 80s, was one of my fucking favorite things to watch in college. It's just this old fucking reruns. Love that shit. There, it has the vibes. And I think it depends on what kind of like mystery, but like reading Nancy Drew as a kid, that was kind of like mysteries were the scariest I could go. Like they were creepy and eerie enough where like they got me a little freaked out, but not too much where I couldn't sleep after. And I think that's one thing that like I'm thinking about as we're chatting through like what sort of spooky media we all like. Like, I think it's important to recognize that we all find different things scary. And so things like lower on the weenie scale are maybe like a super easy read for Tiff that like are just like totally chill. But for me, I'm like cowering. So I think I think thinking about it, like, you know, how much does it scare us? And sometimes a mystery scares me, even if it's like not scary to someone else. So I feel like a lot of mysteries can be spooky. Anything Agatha Christie just feels right in the autumn. It just does.
Well, and they all look right, too. Like all of those books look like spooky season, Halloween.
Yeah.
Books. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. The vibes are there. I mean, I'm just saying, like, look, if somebody gets murdered and there's like knives or guns or something, well, maybe not guns, but for whatever reason, knives involved. Yes. I'm like, yeah, that's scary.
Knives is a poison spooky book.
Yeah. Poison for sure. Yeah. But I think about like I've read some Lucy Foley books. I wouldn't necessarily call them spooky though, but they're definitely mysteries. There's certainly people dying. So I don't know. I think we have to go to our expert. Tiff, what's the verdict?
I think that they definitely can fall under the category of spooky. My mom is way into like cozy mysteries, and like some of the murders in those are like a little gruesome, and like I think if we're gonna qualify like any like serial killer stuff too. I think
for sure.
That we can definitely put mysteries in it. Like, but yeah, like my mom is way into cozy mystery stuff. And so she reads a lot of those. Like that's mainly what she reads. I have a theory about moms and reading that we can talk about at a later date, but like my mom is definitely
mom episode.
Yes. Mom episode.
I mean, it's pretty amazing that serial killers are only allowed to kill in fall and only do kill in fall. Yeah. It's, I mean, there's no serial killers coming around, Valentine's Day or President's Day or whatever.
Yeah.
I do have some recs to contradict that. So hang tight.
Of course you do. Yes, love. So I don't know. How did we get here? Where are we going? Where did we come from?
Enter scene. Mist is floating through the graveyard. Wikipedia mom's hand shoots up through the ground, claws her way out of the earth to present to you the history of spooky literature. Have I set the scene?
You have.
Yes.
Vivid. Not very well. It's very monotone.
And that was great. I did the Foley work, so don't worry. Our listeners will get an incredible audio experience.
Yes.
Okay, well, if we're going to talk spooky books, we absolutely have to start with gothic literature to lay the groundwork for what we're getting into. Yes, I will admit this is a little bit of a repeat from our monster fucking episode back in season one, where we cover how gothic literature influenced a lot of the monster romance genre. But I'm going to try to mix things up a little bit so you're getting some new info. You're welcome. I do it just for you. I love you.
Look, it was hot then. Kisses. And it's hot now. So please, dear God, continue.
Mm-hmm. All right. Gothic lit blends horror, romance, and the supernatural. That's kind of the background we're starting with. It starts in the late 18th century. Horace Walpole, The Castle of Otranto. I have never read this book. I have no idea what it's about. Shout out to Wikipedia. That's why it's my name. But that basically introduced readers to dark, eerie castles and like mysterious happenings in 1764. Moving forward a little bit, Mary Shelley's Frankenstein really pushed gothic elements forward, mixing horror with science fiction through the story of a scientist creating a monster, as we all know, and as Tiff fantasizes about regularly, mm-hmm. which was published in 1818. Then things get a little bloody with Bram Stoker's Dracula in 1897, which brought vampires with fear, seduction, and the supernatural into gothic lit. You can kind of see like how things are rolling, mm-hmm. a little bit of rolling forward. By the 20th century, Shirley Jackson's The Haunting of Hill House, which is published in 1959, took kind of like a fresh twist, focusing on the psychological horror and unsettling nature of a haunted house. Mm-hmm. Fancy, intrigue. And I get that, like, while all of these are like really different books, I think it kind of helps paint a picture of how gothic lit has evolved, but fundamentally at its core has stayed fascinated with like the dark and the mysterious.
God, I'm so turned on. I love all of these spooky mm-hmm. dead bitches mm-hmm. so much.
I just love how smart you sound, Wikipedia mommy.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
You do.
Mm-hmm. Because you
sound
are.
So, so smart.
I'm brushing brushing the graveyard dirt off my shoulders while yes. explaining this all too. So keep telling me how great I am. I love it. I love to hear it. But which of these has anyone read? I'm like, Tiff, do you want to start? What have
I
you
have read?
Read
all of them.
Of course you have.
Yay! You read The Castle of Otranto?
Yes, a while ago, but yes.
Oh my God, of course you did.
How's Horace?
You're the queen of this episode.
I think I read this Wikipedia page and I was like, oh, I should read all of these. I mean, it's very 18th century. Like, it's mm-hmm. it's a little hard to read if you're not, like, prepared for that. But, I mean, it's good. I love a haunted house. Like, I love, love, love a haunted house. And so it is, you know, it's like a spooky castle and spooky stuff. And it was great. I had a good time.
Oh, I've only read Frankenstein and Dracula. I haven't read Castle of Otranto. I feel like I'm going to be saying it wrong. And everyone's just heard me say it like 12 times. So I'm sorry. And then The Haunting of Hill House, I haven't read either. But I feel like after this episode, I'll have to decide if I foray. What about you, Cross? Have you read any of them?
All but The Castle of Otranto, and I would only also bring up that, just because it's relevant to Mary Shelley and everything else, the first vampire novel is called The Vampire by John William, and was written out of the same short, or sorry, John William Polidori, and was written out of the same short story contest that Pierce Bryce Shelley put on, which resulted in the Frankenstein novel.
Yeah.
Damn. Okay, Wikipedia daddy, you're coming for my turf.
But I love The Vampire, and I love Pierce Bryce. I love the Shelleys period, so yes. I love that period of history. And
the graveyard's big enough for both of you. Don't worry.
It is.
Hell yeah. Should we move into some more, like, modernish books and go through, like, our new patent-pending Batty O'Lantern spooky book scale?
The crows are cawing. They're ready.
Oh, yes. Man, I wish. Oh.
Okay, to start us out on the very cutesy end of our spooky scale is Do Your Worst. It's by Rosie Dannon. If you read The Roommate, you're going to recognize this author. I adore her. But this is early in the spooky. Do Your Worst is supernatural. It's silly and it's steamy. My kind of book. Riley, our main character, is an occult expert curse breaker trying to earn her reputation as legitimate. And she's called to a Scottish castle that's cursed, and she's supposed to help break the curse. But Clark, who is a recently scandalized archaeologist who's trying to save his reputation, he wants her off his dig site. So he is not happy about the curse breaker being in his way. This book is giving Mulder and Scully, except in the Scottish Highlands, and significantly sexier. Riley and Clark's enemies with benefits to lovers journey takes some twists and turns I wasn't expecting in a paranormal romance, like dagger to the throat, breaking and entering for a lock of your hair. Oops, we're handcuffed together. Sex rituals on the floor of an abandoned castle, etc., etc. And there are lots of eerie bits that make this a fun, spooky light read.
I'm totally sold. I like had not heard about this book before you mentioned it. And that sounds like a good time. I might move it up my TBR list for spooky season. That sounds really cute.
I'm such a sucker for Mulder and Scully. So the yes! minute you said that, I was like, all right, sold. Just pause the episode. I need to go add this to my Goodreads right now.
Well, and I found this book at Half Price Books and I was like, oh, looks cool. I'll read it. And then I was like, what the fuck? This book is so good. Yeah. I'm like, what are you doing, Rosie? This is incredible.
All right, so now we're on sort of spooky. I'm thinking this jack-o'-lantern looks like kind of your stereotypical jack-o'-lantern. You know, he's got some or she got some angry looking eyebrows. The eyes kind of tilt in, you know, big, like not a smile, but like a grin. And the teeth look kind of jagged, you know, that kind of thing. So I just read this book and it was great. I had it on my TBR for a while and it finally came off. The Southern Book Club's Guide to Killing Vampires by Grady Hendrix. I know Grady Hendrix is a hit or miss author for a lot of people, but I had a great time and I don't usually read male authors. So I enjoyed myself.
Yeah, that's impressive.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. but it was
you're very brave.
Thank you. Yes. I'll accept my flowers at any time. Feel free to send them. My agent will pick them up. but no, this book was really fun. It kind of blends elements of like horror and dark comedy. And it's about this group of Southern housewives who start a book club to escape their housewifey lives. And they realize that they have a lot more fun reading like books about serial killers and kind of reading spooky, scary, murder, gruesome books, as opposed to these like self-help books or like kind of fluffy women's reads that they were originally reading in their book clubs. I think the book starts in like the 80s or the 90s.
Sick.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really great. And it was really fun to see their friendships and he does some really good like relationship work in there too, which is great. But it kind of follows like this very classic storyline that you see a lot in different thrillers or different horror movies, to my understanding, as somebody who doesn't watch very many of them, where this like charming newcomer shows up in the community. And I don't want to spoil anything, but you might guess from the title, he's actually a vampire. And so the book just kind of goes on to incorporate suspense, creepy moments, some like mind fuck psychological manipulation type shit. It explores friendship, explores motherhood, societal expectations, while also not being like so scary. It's more unsettling than terrifying. There's some book jump scares, if that's a thing, but it feels really accessible. It was accessible for me. I was spooked, but I wasn't scared. And it made me feel brave enough to text one of my friends who reads a bunch of horror and ask for some recommendations. And then I'm hoping to read some of the ones that we're talking about today, mostly from Tiff, because I think I might be ready to take the next step. Be warned, there's some body horror. There's some creepy crawly moments. It touches on some of the elements of the spookiest kind and the worst bits of humanity, like some racism and classism issues that I think Grady Hendrix would have done the book a disservice not to include, and that I think make the book a lot stronger.
I really enjoyed Southern Book Club. It was very like Stepford Wivesy almost. Like, I enjoyed that book. It is a good one.
It sounds good.
All right. So we have moved from classic, but a little bit modern. And now we're going to Spooky Town, I guess. And we're going to, this jack-o'-lantern is like, it's like professionally carved and it looks kind of like a grotesque kind of face. And it doesn't look quite the same. Whenever you look at it, if you look at it and you look away and you look back and it's slightly different, that's a lot of hype for a book that is quite spooky. And I don't know that like Kelsey would like, but I really love and it has stuck with me. I'm going to talk about The Only Good Indians by Stephen Graham Jones, my favorite horror author named Stephen. That is important to note. He's the best horror author named Stephen. He's the best horror author named Stephen, and I will fight Cross about this. Okay, so this book follows these four Indigenous guys from an event in their youth where, spoiler for, like, I think the very first chapter, they kill a pregnant elk on land that they're not supposed to be on. And they don't do it well. It's like a slow, painful death for this very pregnant elk cow. And then it follows them 10 years down the line as something is seeking vengeance very slowly and effectively and violently and gruesomely. And not only on them, but on people around them. It is a book that, like, made me feel genuinely kind of yucky and disturbed. Like, I had to put it down at one point. There's one very descriptive scene of the entity, and it genuinely, like, gave me the yuck a little bit, and I had to, like, pause and go walk around in the sun for a minute and be like, okay, I can go back to it now. But it's really, really well written, and it's I genuinely I would, like, throw myself on train tracks for Stephen Graham Jones and anything that he writes. So that does have some extreme violence, body horror, haunting, violence against and by animals. But it is resolved by a one-on-one basketball game, which sounds fake.
What? It okay, Air Bud.
It's not. It's so. It's
like
such
up in here.
It's such a tense scene, and like you're in your head. You're like reading it with your eyes or your ears or whatever, and you're reading it, and you're like, this can't be where this is going. And it goes to that point, and they start playing basketball, and you're like, what the fuck? How is this still scary? But I'm just reading about like basketball, like a one-on-one
basketball
game.
Have you ever seen the hit film Space Jam? Some monsters play basketball in that one too. So
that's I was so thinking true. Troy Bolton in High School Musical on my fear factor list, but
totally yes to both.
Tiff, does this book have vibes of like It Follows? That's like one of the few horror movies I've seen.
Sort of, in that it's like an unknown entity, I guess. But it's much more fast.
Okay.
Like, part of what makes It Follows tense is, like, the slowness. But I think that once things get ramped up, they really are ramped up. And there is no off-ramp. You are just going at, like, 110, and you are not stopping.
Ooh, got it. Okay, okay. When you said, like, It Follows them over time, I was thinking of It Follows. And, man, that movie freaked me out. So I was trying to figure out if this book, if I could handle this book, or if I'm too much of a Halloween-y.
Yeah, it's great. I love this book. I tell everybody who wants to be scared by a book that they should read this book, because it is so, so good. I love this book so much.
I just want to second Tiff's recommendation here. I absolutely adore The Only Good Indians. At the same part that you were talking about where you were horrified and put the book down, I threw it across the room. it is a novel unlike any other.
Truly.
Graham Jones is excellent.
Yeah, it's so unique.
I'm so hyped for you both. Lindsay, I'm excited for you to read it. Oh, I think for anyone who's as much of a weenie as me, I am going to stay 10 feet away from it. Thank you very much.
Yeah, girl, I'm still on the fence. I think I'm putting on a brave face, but yeah, I don't know.
Well, you sound so brave and confident. Your confidence is hot.
Thank
I'm here
you.
For it.
It's all
I'm like,
facade.
I'm getting scared talking about it. I'm scared.
Beyond what Tiff said, because everything that Tiff said was great, the only thing I would also say is that the book is relatively short, so yeah. It's great to pick it up and kind of run with it, especially if you're looking for something scarier that isn't a crazy investment. Mm-hmm. It's a good call.
Yeah, okay, it cool. is very quick.
Well, I think this is a good segue to our next section, which is kind of, we started talking about it a little bit, but what even is the appeal of spooky books for us? Like, why do we like to be scared? What are we into? I want to know. I want to know how you all feel about these scary, scary books.
That's such a good question. And like, I don't even know if I like to be scared. Like, I think I don't. And I'm curious to hear from Tiff, because I'm not sure if there's people out there who genuinely like to be scared, or if they find it fun, or if they're like the same people who can go to a hollow, a haunted house and be like, oh, this is funny. That's why I'm having fun. Because look, when I'm in the haunted house, even if I know the clown running at me is just some like underpaid college student looking to make a couple extra bucks, I'm like, get the fuck away from me, and I'm gonna scream in their face.
I don't know.
I know what I can't do, right? Like, I can't do religious themes about like demons or ghosts if they're very much rooted in some sort of, like, especially Christian religion that goes back to some weird trauma stuff. But I do like mm-hmm. when it's a little bit spooky and it's fantasy. I like when it's atmospheric. I like when it's unsettling, like a misty moor. Oof, I'm there. Like a foggy graveyard. I'm super in. But like a possessed nun terrorizing children. Absolutely not. That is not fun for me. There is no way for me to make that silly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Lindsay, while you're yelling in the face of the clown in the haunted house, I'm yelling at my friend who's trying to get me to go into the haunted house because I'm not fucking stepping in there. Hard no.
I've done like two. Can't do it.
No, thank you. No, thank you. No, thank you. I don't like to be scared. I don't like scary movies. I get really bad nightmares from scary movies. I just like, I'm not about that. But I have found that I enjoy a little bit of spooky in my monster books. And I like eerie. I feel like genuinely mm-hmm. we have set ourselves up as far as like, we're all three on different points on the spookometer scale.
On our spooky journey.
Yeah, exactly. I'm very comfortable where I'm sitting. Don't plan on moving up. But I'm so fascinated by people who enjoy and love it. So Tiff, I want to hear about you. I want to know why you love spooky books.
Yeah, so I actually do enjoy like being scared, especially in media stuff. I think that in the same way that we kind of talk about how romance books are, and especially like when we talked about monster fuckers, to bring it back to that, like it's mm-hmm. a safe way to explore things like sexuality and things like kink and things that are a little bit like outside of the regular things that mm-hmm. people experience. Yeah. I think in a very similar way, horror is a way to think about things that are scary and things that are terrifying and like think about them and explore them in a safe way that like I know that I'm never going to be haunted by the spirit that is in Only Good Indians, but like I enjoyed reading about it because it gave me that like adrenaline rush and it allowed me to think about those kinds of things and the everlasting violent vengeance in like a very safe and secure space and way.
That makes so much sense. Also, counterpoint though, totally. What if you are haunted by the spirit in the Only Good Indians?
So you know, scary. I'm not good enough at basketball, so I know that I will fall to that.
You fucked up to get to that point.
Yeah, I fucked up.
Maybe like that's how I need to start reframing this. Like, I'm fucked either way. Like, I am dying in the zombie apocalypse, so maybe I should just read it because, like, mm-hmm. I know my fate. I don't have a chance. May as well know what I'm up against.
I just have very vivid dreams, and I don't want any more ideas than the shit that's already up there. But I get it. That's a good,
powerful REM cycle.
Yeah. Also, it should be noted, if we have people who are listening who read like extreme horror, I do not fuck with extreme horror. Like, there is a line that I simply cannot cross. It gets too yucky, gross, weird for me. There's also some like things that I think are popular as like, I don't know. I'm on like spooky books TikTok, and there are some people who are like, Tender as the Flesh is the scariest book I've ever read. Like, okay, that's fun. Ooh. I disagree. It's not that scary. It's just weird and gross. But then there are also things like, there is a market of books, and it's the equivalent of like saying The Human Centipede or a Serbian film is your favorite horror film is talking about like these books are your favorite horror books. And I simply do not fuck there. That is not for me. I am on the, I like the spooky end of our spookyometer, but like I don't fuck around in extreme horror land. So if we have people who are listening who are like, oh, that's not even a scary thing, that you haven't read Playground, like, no, I haven't read Playground. I'm not gonna read Playground. It sounds scary. Fucking horrible.
But like, give
I don't
us your
recs
because we could disperse them, but also keep it in your pants. We're not going there.
yeah I just want to like give that little addendum to me saying that I really like exploring scary things. Is there is a limit, and I simply don't go past my limit.
I like knowing Tiff's scale, so that's it's a good line. I know where the line is, which is
have something. You ever started reading a scary book and then realized that was your limit and had to nope out?
So I read something that was advertised as scary that I just found unsettling and gross, and I finished it. But I didn't like it, and I don't agree with people saying that. So the story is called things have gotten worse since we last spoke or something. And it's about, it's like a sapphic story that's told through these like online, like essentially through emails. It gets really weird and it gets really gross out. Like there's a lot of like, they're talking back and forth and one of them is very much more manipulative and they're talking about like, oh, we're two women, we can never have a baby, but you know, we can have if you leave gross food out. This is extremely gross, so don't listen to me if you are grossed out by things. If you leave food out and it gets maggots in it and you put it inside you, that's like a baby that we can have together. Like, and it, like it got to
what?
I know. It got really just gross and like shock value. And I didn't find it interesting. I just found it yucky and unfun. Yeah. So I haven't experienced something that I like had to nope out of. And I think it's because I kind of know my limit and I'm like, if it's billed as being extreme horror, I'm not going to be interested. And also, yeah, if somebody on TikTok recommended it as the scariest thing they ever read, I'm going to disagree.
Okay, back to being scared. I know, Tiff, I feel like I have a better idea of why you like to be scared. Lindsay, are there things that you like about scary books that like you feel like you can't get from other media?
Well, I really like what Tiff was saying about, you know, the same way that we talk about how romance books can be a way to explore your sexuality, that it can be, they can also be a way to explore some of these, you know, scarier themes or even things like death or mortality or whatnot. I hadn't really thought about that before. So I think maybe, you know, because people can control it, especially if it's a book or a movie, you can just turn it off. If it's a book, especially, you can kind of, in your mind's eye, edit what it looks like and what, you know, even if the words say something super gruesome, you can kind of be like, I don't want to picture these maggots coming out of this person, so I'm just gonna not, you know, or like you can make it a cartoon, or like, at least that's how my brain works. So I think there's a maybe an aspect of control, but I do know I have some friends who just find horror funny, and so they read it because it's, you know, ridiculous and kind of silly. Which, to be totally honest, that's why I read some romance, because I just find it to be goofy. So I get it. What about you?
Yeah, I'm with you. I definitely, like, I don't love that much scary stuff, but I can absolutely handle it more in a book than I can in a film. Like, I get way more scared in movies. Or, like, I was watching Travis play, fuck, what is the video game that turned into a show?
Last of Us?
That's, like, post-apocalypse? Yes. Like, I was watching him play The Last of Us, and I got too scared.
That game is scary.
It because the little clickers scared the living shit out of me. I bet you I could read about it, like, with no problem, but I definitely don't think I could watch him play it. So books just feel like a safer space for me to, like, explore these kinds of themes.
See, I find it so interesting that you both think that, like, that you both find movies less or more. I think that we're, like, backwards. So to me, ooh, I find movies to be the least scary. Like, out of, like, scary, there are three horror things that, to me, are, like, the scary things that I like. It's video games, books, and movies. I find movies to be the least scary. And I think it's because it's somebody else's interpretation of a scary thing on a screen. To me, like, looking at, like, a slasher movie on a screen is not as scary as reading a slasher movie, because then the movie's in my brain. Like, the way that I read books is that it essentially, like, I get put into the situation. So, like, if I'm reading something scary, I am in there. I think that that, to me, is scarier. And then I think that the scariest way to do something is video games. I think it's also interesting that you both said that The Last of Us was too scary, because I love The Last of Us and I barely remember it being scary. I just think about, like, the drama of the story.
There's and a lot of jump scares.
Like, the character arcs and stuff.
Oh, I can't do jump scares.
That's true. And the clickers are gross.
That's why movies are hard for me, because jump scares, like, and then I think I just, same. I don't know if it's like a sensory thing, but you got the music, you've got the dialogue, you've got the visuals. So I'm just like,
yep,
in it. And I feel like it always feels like I'm like going up on a roller coaster. I don't know. And then, yeah, I can't do jump scares. Yeah. Like, this is so embarrassing as far as how scary movies affect me. When I was in, like, middle or high school, my dad and I watched Scary Movie 3, which is objectively like a satire comedy about scary movies. Like, it was making fun of The Ring, which I've never seen The Real Ring, but it was making fun of The Ring. And when that bitch came out of the TV and was supposed to be funny because she was, like, flailing everywhere, I was fucking terrified and I did not sleep for, like, a week. So, wow.
Lindsay, I love that that's your, so whenever people are like, no, you just need to try another scary movie, I'm like, do you remember fucking Monster House from like 2007, that's, the animated kids film? I still have nightmares about that fucking haunted house and that woman's spirit living in the basement. And it was a kid's movie. So I'm just like, I don't think you understand.
I love Monster House still. So like, that's, I so fuck funny. With that. That's so good. That's incredible. I love both you. Of you so much. That's hilarious.
Okay, well, we love you and we want your rec. So since we're your two fave Halloweenies, what are some gateway books for the Scaredy Cats? Please, Tim, help us.
Yes. Okay, so I have a couple of things. So number one, I think one that I just got turned on to this author, but Nettle and Bone by T. Kingfisher. It's a little bit spooky. It's very much like a good for her book.
Ooh.
But there is a dog she makes out of bones, and that's like her sidekick. And it's like a little, it's like a little bit of a romance, and it's really sweet. And that is also like a short, nice little, like, atmospherically creepy, but so fun, so good. I'm gonna sing the praises of Silvia Moreno Garcia later when we talk about Mexican Gothic, but her other book that I would recommend to like newbies would be Silver Nitrate. It's about the film industry in Mexico City in, I believe, the 80s. But it ties back to the 40s. And it's like supernatural. I love the way that Silvia Moreno Garcia writes atmosphere. She's so atmospheric. I love it.
Is she the same author as the mushroom one?
Mexican Gothic. Yes.
Yes. Mexican Gothic. I love that book. That book was great. So I'm going to add that to my TBR for sure.
Yeah. Silver Nitrate for sure. Anything else by her, I love her. I also am going to mention the Sandman graphic novels with the caveat that fuck Neil Gaiman. I'm so mad at you for ruining a good thing. But those graphic novels, the art is beautiful. The story is so like enchanting and enveloping. And I think that the way that those characters are characterized, I know that sounds repetitive, but like the characters feel so real. Like you feel like you know Dream. You feel like you know Death. Like you feel like you know these characters. And it's genuinely, it's such like a beautiful, wonderful way to spend your time, especially if you're looking for a graphic novel that is a little bit scary but not like spooky ooky. It's great. I love it.
Was the Netflix show based off of those graphic novels?
Yes, it's based on the first book. There's 10 regular books, and then there's Overture. And then there's a couple of other like spin-off series. But the 10 standard like Sandman books, I would highly recommend. And then Overture is great too, just for like the beauty of the images and stuff.
Neil, why do you have to suck? Like, come on.
Truly.
That's, like, all of that sounds so good. It's like you fucking
buy
dick.
Them secondhand. Honestly, get them secondhand or get them from the library. Like I cannot emphasize enough though how gorgeous and formative they are. Like they're so ingrained as a part of me. A lot of his books are, but the Sandman art in particular, if you look at like some of the art from the Sandman books and then you look at the art that I have in my house, you're like, oh, that makes sense.
I love that.
Just to give credit to the other creators real quick, because we didn't say fuck Neil Gaiman, but the artists rule. Sam Keith, Mike Dringenberg, Jill Thompson, Sean McManus, Mark Hempel, Brian Talbot, and Mike Zulli.
Thank you.
Yes. Yeah, thank you, Cross.
And then I think my last like rec for the weenie books is going to be Anatomy, a Love Story by Dana Schwartz. You've probably seen the cover. It's like of a girl kneeling and her dress is like all these ruffles in the shape of like an anatomical heart.
Yes. Yes. I have like picked this up so many times and not taken it with me, but now maybe I will.
It's beautiful. It is also a love story, like, you know, like the title says, but it is a little gross. The main plot is that the girl wants to be a surgeon in a time where that is not acceptable. So she goes and she watches like surgery theater, and she like sneaks into surgery school pretending she's a man, and then she's like practicing on cadavers. So there's a little bit of gross out, but it is still very, very good. I like it a lot.
Amazing. Tiff, those are all great. And as a weenie, I am so grateful for all of these recommendations. I feel like we need to give a little treat to all the spookier good listeners we have. What about some Rex for the non-weenies, for those who are higher up on the spooky scale.
Totally. Just echoing myself, anything by Stephen Graham Jones, he's the star of this episode. And again, the best man named Stephen writing horror. Anything that he writes. My Heart is a Chainsaw isn't like his. He has a trilogy that starts with My Heart is a Chainsaw. And if you want to read a really good slasher series with the best final girl of all time, Jade Daniels, absolutely that one. I think I talked about The Luminous Dead in our gay brunch because I really loved the majority of that book. I hated the ending, but like the majority of that book, it feels so claustrophobic and it's so it's very atmospheric and very like capitalism is the true horror. But it was real. It was really, really good.
So true, bestie. Yeah.
So true. So true. Another graphic novel, The Nice House on the Lake. There are two of them out. There's a third one coming out. Those are also graphic novels. End of the world. These people are invited to a cabin on the lake, a very nice house. And then the world ends outside and they are disconnected from it and they can't leave. It has some really, again, like this gorgeous art that is really spooky to look at. And that is by James Tynion. I believe it's Tynion the fourth. He's genuinely like the fourth.
Slay.
But those were really good too. Kindred by Octavia E. Butler. Honestly, a lot by Octavia E. Butler for like post-apocalyptic kind of vibes. Kindred, fun fact, is lauded as being one of the most accurate depictions of slavery in American fiction. And it hurts like that. There's time travel and torture and sexual assault and regular assault. Somebody loses an arm. It made me feel viscerally uncomfortable.
Tiff, you're making me feel very brave because I actually have read this book. So I'm like, nice. I'm in the non-weenie section.
We go.
Yay. But no, this was a phenomenal read. It is very scary and it's nearness to reality. So damn. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes total sense.
There are scenes that are like studied in college courses as being like, this is the best representation of slave life that we have.
Wow.
Because it's so accurate to actual enslaved people's lives. Like, it's uncomfortable. Okay, last one. Baddie favorite Chuck Tingle.
yes.
Has written now two horror books. I've read one. I've read Camp Damascus, and I will recommend that. It is an autistic lesbian going to conversion camp, and then crazy shit starts happening. Like, my partner read it first, and every time he'd finish a chapter, he would put his Kindle down and go, "Whoa, that was crazy." And then he'd immediately pick it back up and go to the next chapter.
Is it actually scary? Isn't Chuck Tingle like a comedy writer?
Yes. So he writes the very good erotica that is the comedy erotica. But
that we love.
Like he won an award for Camp Damascus because it was genuinely so scary. Like Camp Damascus is genuinely scary. Bury Your Gaze is his one that he put out this year that I'm going to read this October. And I will update when I have read it because Camp Damascus was so good and so weird and so creepy. But yeah, you'd be like, oh man, the guy who talked about Mothman delivering your mail and pounding you in the butt also wrote like a genuinely terrifying horror novel, which is awesome.
Amazing. So
those are my spooky recommendations for now.
Those are so good. We need to like make sure the list is clear so every baby baddie knows where to start or where to continue based on their reading interests.
I'll make a post.
I'll be honest, I went on Goodreads and I added things to my list during all of that. And then I also saw that Tiff like 18 minutes ago or something added Do Your Worst by Rosie Dinon also. So good job.
Yeah, I did.
Nice work. Yay! Good! I'm glad it worked. Yay! I need to talk to someone about this book. So I'm excited you guys want to read it. Makes me very happy.
Hell yeah.
So we've talked about the Spookometer. You've gotten some good recs. We've added them to our Goodreads. I kind of want to think about some of these tropes that we get out of spooky books and spooky literature, because like I said at the beginning of the pod, I at first thought it would be a pretty cut and dry, this is a spooky book, this is not. But as we've been talking, clearly there are way more different facets of spooky literature than maybe we originally thought. So let's get into it. You know, obviously we've got haunted houses, isolated locations, graveyards, small towns, monsters, yes. vampires, mysteries, Ooh. Murders. But what are some that we might not have thought of? Or maybe we touched on it, but didn't get into yet.
We mentioned it at the very top, but I think dark academia is always an interesting spot to dabble in at the beginning of the spooky scale. It's sort of like a spooky themes can feel a little cozy adjacent. Like sure, you're stranded on a haunted island, but you're unplugged and the sea sounds really nice.
I like that.
So I think some of the kind of like dark academia books that feel in that spooky vein are like A Study in Drowning by Ava Reed.
No.
Has anyone read that book?
It's on my list. It's like towards the top of my list because I keep getting recommended it.
I really loved it. I know Batty Addy has read it. I think the author writes Draco fan fiction. I don't know if the actual book is Draco fan fiction. Shout out to Addy. I can like hear her cackling about Draco in the back of my mind. But it's, you know, it's like it's a isolated location. It's kind of like a haunted home. There's entities beyond that are involved. So I definitely feel like it lends itself to a spooky book. And I think both of you would really like it.
Mm-hmm.
More in other dark academia recommendations that I think both of you potentially have read are Ninth House and Hellbent by Leigh Bardugo.
Hell yeah, I love that book.
Yeah. They're very eerie. And like, get your heart racing. I almost said, get your heart rumping.
Get that heart rumping, ladies. Let's go.
I don't know. But that one always, both of those books just like had me like at the edge of my seat. Lindsay, what did you think about them?
I loved them. I listened to the audiobook versions. I thought they were great.
Mm.
Also, I'm a sucker for a good cover. Do I judge a book by its cover? Absolutely, I do.
Same.
And those have some great covers. It gets a little bit into like the spooky demon area for me, but I think it was far-fetched enough and more dark academia than like religious that it didn't bother me as much as some maybe similar books might have. It also just like felt so atmospheric with the Yale campus being the setting than like a random town. Partially because, you know, it's Yale. Like, there's a lot of stories about the Ivy Leagues. I could also imagine Rory Gilmore just being there.
Yeah,
like,
Gilmore Girls is there.
It can't be that spooky if Emily and Richard sent beloved Rory to Yale, you know? but the book itself was the series, both of them, or what have you, are definitely kind of cozy, slow burn, atmospheric, spooky mm-hmm. books that live up to the hype.
I haven't read these. You mentioned the covers. Is this the one that the cover is the dead rabbit?
That's the second one.
And that's the second one. First one's a
snake. And the first one's a
snake.
Yeah. Okay. I've seen them. I think that I actually used a Libro credit to get the first one. And I just haven't listened to it yet.
Get at it. I think this is the time. This is the season for it. Another dark academia I love is The Atlas Six by Olivia Blake. Have either of you read that? Has anyone read that?
No, but I have it sitting
on my shelf.
Yep.
Cross, you read it?
Yes.
Do you agree that this is like, that it's like a spooky-ish?
I would say it's adjacent. Like, it fits with the dark academia, right? If we're qualifying that, I would say.
Yeah. I recommend that too. And I feel like we need to do a whole separate dark academia episode. These are just some of the top faves that felt like the creepiest in dark academia. And then just to like round it off, The Invisible Life of Addie LaRue by Victoria Schwab. Mm-hmm. I feel like that book was cozy, spooky, cozy, eerie, I guess. I think the other ones are more spooky, but I still definitely think this is a spooky book too.
No, you're spot on. It's totally eerie. And it feels like the whole thing should be in black and white, or like it should just be raining for the entirety of the book or something. Like it's a very, very cozy read. While reading The Invisible Life of Addie LaRue, oddly enough, I like pictured the whole thing in the animation style of Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows book 7 when they tell the story of the Deathly Hallows, the three brothers. There we go.
Mm-hmm.
It felt spooky, but it didn't feel scary, even though that main guy that, you know, I don't want to spoil it. The spooky guy, spooky more ways than one. Yeah. I can think of some like dark academia that aren't really spooky, like The Goldfinch by Donna Tartt or The Starless Sea by Aaron Morgenstern. But I'm having a hard time putting a finger on what separates that from spooky dark academia. So maybe we'll have to get into that in our dark academia episode.
Totally. Yeah.
I love Addie LaRue. Like, I just, I don't find it eerie. I find it to be just more like this interesting and beautiful prose. I don't find it spooky or eerie at all. I just think that it's cozy and nice.
Ooh, interesting. I think the spooky, and I totally get that. I think the spooky aspect for me is just like, is the atmosphere for one, and for two, it has a lot, it's a lot more to do with the fact that, like, what if you existed and no one remembered you? Like, that idea in itself is like, is spooky to me. Yeah, so that's like the piece. I would agree that, like, it definitely doesn't have like scary themes to it, but like, it makes me think in a way that gets my stomach a little twisted.
I can totally get that, because I am going to talk about some sci-fi horror that gives me some sci-fi that gives me a similar feeling. So
sweet. Okay, cool. Love. I'm excited.
So maybe in the same vein of, you know, intercrossing genres between one and what is spooky, what is not, spooky fantasy, right? Like, there are spooky elements in fantasy. When I think about, say, like a little series called Outlander by Diana Gabaldon, right? Like, there's like spooky elements in it, but I wouldn't say that book is spooky at all.
Yeah.
So where's the line between a spooky fantasy book and a fantasy book? What fantasy books do we find to be just a little bit spooky scary?
Ooh. Well, what first comes to mind for me is One Dark Window by Rachel Gillig. It's a gothic romantic fantasy book. So it has a lot of those like gothic vibes with the romanticy kind of aspect. It's a magic system that's based on power coming from holding cards, like physical cards.
Like,
it's
Digimon.
Not tarot.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not tarot cards, but it feels like tarot cards. It's like, there's this whole background of like the deck was made by this king who gave up things for it. And like, I don't know, there's just like an eerie background to the way that the magic system works. And so the gothic elements in it are what make it feel like a spooky book to me.
I love that. The way you're describing it does make it sound like Yu-Gi-Oh! A little bit, which...
Yes!
Like, I'm sure that it is like... a good series, but you're like, oh, the power comes from the cards. I'm like, that's Yu-Gi-Oh, baby. You can't trick me.
Nothing scarier than being a Yu-Gi-Oh master.
I love it. Well, it's like, there's like eight of this card, and that card gives you extra strength, and like four of these that lets you like read people's minds, and two of these, and if you use it too often, it'll like, you have an adverse effect. But yes,
it's magic. It's,
yes,
the gathering
magic.
It's Magic the Gathering. Yes.
I was going to say, it sounds like they need to license a board game at some point.
Know, right?
That's cool. I need to check that out.
Yeah, totally. I'm interested.
I think some that have gotten on the spooky side of fantasy for me are like Starling House by Alex E. Harrow.
Oh,
The Familiar by Leigh Bardugo, who we mentioned earlier. She also wrote Ninth House and Hellbent. I don't know if anyone's read it yet. It's a pretty new book.
I have a signed copy and I haven't read it yet. I'm so excited.
Ooh.
I know.
Oh, man, whoever is like on Leigh Bardugo's cover marketing PR team, whatever, needs
a
raise, because all
raise.
Of her books are just great.
They're
they slap
beautiful.
Every time. Every time. They're so
every
good.
Time.
So
every time.
I don't know if you've opened the inside cover. It's like this beautiful pattern, I think, of pomegranates, if I'm remembering correctly. And it's just gorgeous. Mm-hmm. Every inch of that book is beautiful.
It's stunning. And then I know Tiff and I, in the past, we've talked about the Night Circus being a Halloween fall time read. Would you consider that spooky, or is it just atmospheric? Like, what is your vibe on that?
It's not scary. It's not spooky. It's atmospheric for sure. It's like a gothic circus. But I definitely think that it's atmospheric. I would not describe it as scary or spooky.
I would describe it as spooky, not scary. As someone on the other end of the spectrum.
I reread it every October. This is not me like trying to say anything negative at all. Like,
no.
I reread this book every single October. Like, this is a diehard book for me. I love this book.
I love this book too. I think it goes to show just that our scales of what kind of like spooks us out a little bit is different. Like, there's going to be a different range. I think it's very clear how much of a Halloween-y I am. which is totally fine. And I think it's really interesting to see, Tiff, where we cross over and what books that we agree are like spooky and what books we don't agree. So I think it's totally fine if you're like, that is not spooky. And I'm like, but it kind of is.
It's a widow scary.
But, you know, exactly.
That's so cute. Just like a fun fact about the Night Circus, the audiobook is read by Jim Dale, who is the same guy who reads the audiobooks for Harry Potter, who is, to me, one of the very best audiobook narrators. So if you are looking for a good audiobook for this season, the Night Circus audiobook is read by Jim Dale, and he does all of the voices, and it's really
good. Oh, fun.
That sounds great. I didn't know that. I might have to do a re-listen.
Yeah, in same.
This Halloween 2024. Speaking of authors we don't like, in reference to Harry Potter.
Again,
I also think in this same vein of like spooky fantasy, Neil Gaiman, The Ocean at the End of the Lane. That book spooked me out a bit. I needed to like take a breath after that one. And not in like a terrified way, but just in like a I am questioning everything around me. I need to just lay by myself for a little bit and take a big deep breath.
Oh, that's so interesting. I feel like I felt kind of similar when I finished that, but like in a wondrous way. I was like, oh, everything could be magic. Isn't that so cool? Like, I really love The Ocean at the End of the Lane. I think, I have like a nice copy of that that I got secondhand, but it was very like wondrous to me when I read it.
I'm pretty sure the last like 50 pages of the kid almost dying.
Yeah, but he doesn't.
Yeah, fair enough.
I love the difference of how you two are explaining this book too. It's like, oh, it's wondrous. It's just, oh, the and Lindsay's like, what?
Furthering the point that like everybody has different tastes. Everything is different to everybody.
The fun of reading.
Yeah. I'll round out the Neil Gaiman, you know, circle jerk with this that we can stop talking about him. Coraline would also be up there for me on fantasy. That's a little scary. That movie freaked me out. Same. Another animated movie that scared you as a kid.
Yeah.
Oof. Button eyes? Absolutely not. 100%. How do you see?
I think that's a Leica studio. Leica should be given all of the money forever. I love Leica so much. They have never missed. So small little tantalizing tease for our book episode we're going to do. The Undertaking of Heart and Mercy is one of my favorite books of all time. Everybody should read it. It feels like 8 people total have read this book. It's by Megan Bannon, and it is a perfect book. It's not, again, I don't find this scary. It has some spooky elements, like some undead, but it's, you've got mail. Like, it's so cute. It's so sweet. It's it's adorable. The characters are great. I guess the atmosphere is a little bit spooky because she is an undertaker and works in a funeral home, and he is like an undead catcher ranger guy. But I think that could probably fit in this category.
Absolutely. That book was super cute, and we'll talk about it more in our book episode, but Tiff made us all read it, and I'm so glad that she did, because it was great.
I'm also so glad that everybody finally read it.
I know.
Good. Good. I also think about with spooky fantasy, this also might be spooky sci-fi, depending on, you know, who you ask. Gideon the Ninth by Tamsin Muir. It's spooky. It's atmospheric. That's not really like the point of it, though. It just like happens to be spooky. And then there's a plot, which makes it less spooky to me and more like fun spooky, despite all of the characters being literal necromancers and like dealing with the dead. But I also haven't finished the series. So who knows where it's going to go?
It remains spooky.
Yeah, I have a friend and listener. Hi, Shelby. What's up? Who is trying to get me to read the rest of this series, because I read Gideon the Ninth, but I thought it was a sapphic romance.
A sapphic. That's right.
I was just going to reference this. That. I was going to ask, isn't this a sapphic romance, though, Kelsey?
And so I was like, sick. This is going to be so great. And then I read it and I was like, what the fuck? So I think I need to go back to it. But Shelby has been trying to get me to finish it. And maybe I will, especially knowing reframing what the actual series is.
Yeah. Oof. I can't imagine reading it with that expectation and then it falling very short of being that, especially for the first one. Maybe later.
There's some light pining, but that's about it.
Yeah.
Like, that's so funny. Never getting over that.
Cross, did you read all of them? Is that what you were saying?
Yeah, they're great. They only get better.
Okay. Okay. Well, then you're convincing me. One last book for the spooky fantasy section. This is a much more atmospheric book, but A Discovery of Witches by Deborah Harkness. Has anyone read those?
I read it and was bored by it, but I'm glad.
Yeah, I had some friends DNF it.
You it's liked dense. It? It's dense. A good friend of mine, it was one of her favorite series. So I was like, I will give it a go. I think it like, even though it's dense and it's a longer book, I did really enjoy it. It has alchemy and magic, time travel. It's very, like I said, atmospheric. I mean, it's vampires and witches. And it's not my favorite vampire book, but I felt like the creepy eeriness of it was really fascinating and entertaining. And I have not watched the show. I feel like the show might be better. It might be one of those things for me where like the show is better than the book. Cross is making a face. Use your words, Crossland.
I'm just making so many faces this episode because I have such strong horror opinions, which is why I'm being kept in the corner. I haven't read the book. I've watched the show, though, and I don't know that it would be better, but it was pretty good as far as the show goes. But I've heard complaints from readers more generally. But who knows?
I just love that Tiff was bored by it and you didn't care for the show. What am I doing with this recommendation?
It was good. Like it was. No, I didn't mean that. I mean, it was like good, but like book readers are kind of like don't like it as much. So I assume that that's like puts it in a weird space, you know, when like other people like it, but the book people don't.
Mm-hmm. Well, good to know. Good to know.
I mean, I love a good dense door stopper, we know. So maybe I'll check it out. But my friend who didn't like it also loves a good dense door stopper. And one of her critiques, much like Jennifer Armentrout, was like, this book needs to be heavily edited and could have been like 300 pages shorter. So
yeah,
who knows?
I also love a doorstopper. Like I read doorstoppers pretty frequently and I don't know, man. I appreciated what they were going for. It just didn't hit for me personally. And I got bored and I read the first one and then I was like, oh, there's more. All right. I bet I know how it'll go. I'm good.
Well, listeners, you have to decide.
Yeah.
We're all going to fight about it.
Well, I promise that's not my best vampire rec, which I think is a great way to move us forward. I think going back to the history of kind of spooky literature, Dracula being such a large influence, we have to touch on the vampires and how vampire books can often be, or not always, but can very often be spooky books. Like what makes them spooky? Are they all spooky adjacent? I want to know the baddie opinions on the vampires.
I mean, does like having vampires in a book inherently make it a spooky book, or does it just make it a candidate? Because I know I'm opening a can of worms, but like, does that make Twilight a spooky book, even if we don't count it as a scary book? Is From Blood and Ash by Jennifer Armentrout a spooky book? Is Court of the Vampire Queen by Kelsey's deep, close personal friend KT Robert a spooky book? I don't think so. So I don't know. Where's that line? I need an expert's opinion.
That's a really good question. I think the funniest thing to me about vampires is that they're not necessarily all spooky. They are all horny. And I think that's part of what I love about vampires is that like a core attribute of them is that like they're horny and so is everybody else. I just think that's neat. I think that's a fun part of vampires. I'm sure that at the time it was, but like Dracula isn't super scary. Like there's not a ton of like actual scary stuff happening in it. I also just might be kind of a snob when it comes to scary vampires, because like I also think that like Salem's Lot I didn't find scary at all. I've read several. My mother-in-law talked about how she read Salem's Lot and then she had to sleep with a picture of Jesus next to her bed for like 2 weeks because she was so scared after reading a scene where a vampire comes in a window. And I was like, I don't get why you were so scared by this, Jill. I love you. I simply don't. I don't get how it is so scary to people. But that might be just because I'm like offensively horny at vampires. And so I don't find them that scary.
You're not offending anyone here.
No, you've really set me up with like, is Twilight a spooky book? And I'm like, I don't think it is, but is it because I've read it so much that I love it so much? Like, it's absolutely atmospheric. It definitely feels like there's a Twilight vibe. There's hoa 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 season, hoa, hoa, as we hoa, know. And like, we know. So like, I don't know. I don't think it is, but I think you're right, Tiff, that the line is just that like, vampires are hornier. So we don't have as much crossover. But I do think there are some spooky vampire books. Like the first one that I can think of is Blood and Orange and Black Rose by Karina Hale or Halle. I'm not really sure how to say her last name. It's a Dracula retelling with like rebirths and very gothic. She plays the organ. He's a professor. And then it changes again. It's a whole thing. But I really enjoyed that retelling. It was really... And it's almost not even really a retelling. It's supposed to be the same Dracula, just like years later, I guess. But that definitely felt like a spooky book to me. It's still a horny vampire book, but it felt significantly more spooky, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'll add that to my list for sure.
I will want to know your thoughts because I really liked the first one. And then if you do read it, I want to discuss the ending with someone. So please let me know if you do. I think for sure Tiff has read it. I can't remember, Lindsay, if you read it, but Serpent in the Wings of Night by Carissa Broadbent. Do we feel like that's a spooky vampire book?
I don't think it was spooky. I have read it. I was the first one in the group to read it after you recommended it.
Oh, Lindsay, I'm so sorry. I'm just shitting on you, and you're the first one to be influenced.
Always. I don't think it was. I don't think it's spooky.
Okay,
but it was. But yeah, it was fun. I really liked it.
Yeah. I think I'm having a harder time drawing the line with vampires because I wrote it down. I was like, totally, this is a spooky book. And I'm like, it's really not.
Mm-hmm. Is like, it spooky or is the cover just gray?
Ooh, there you go.
Real.
There's blood, but that's about it. I mean,
blood is spooky.
Yeah. I found the scariest part of The Serpent and the Wings of Night and its sequel to be the dealing with death of a loved one because I read it at a time where I should not have been reading something like that. And I have not finished the sequel because of that.
Yeah, that's fair.
The way that that book covers grief is what was one of the more moving aspects of that series for me. So, yeah, but I don't think that makes it spooky. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Baby Baddies, tell us your thoughts.
I mean, obviously, I already talked about the Southern Book Club's Guide to Killing Vampires by Grady Hendrix. That one feels very self-explanatory. But when I think about like books that have a vampire in them, but aren't necessarily scary, I think about this very mid book I read last year called The Utterly Uninteresting and Unadventurous Tales of Fred the Vampire Accountant by Drew Hayes. It was not scary, but it definitely is vampires. Very silly, kind of sexist. But like, I'd read it again for fun around Halloween time, but there's a vampire in it, right? So like, it definitely feels like a fall Halloween-y book. The other series that this makes me think of, did anybody as a kid read Bunnicula? By James and Deborah Howe, the vampire bunny.
They're so cutesy.
They're so adorable. Funny. I don't remember anything about them. I remember they kind of freaked me out as a kid. So, you know, going back to my weenie roots, but like Bunnicula and what is it? The Celery Stalks at Midnight. Like,
yes,
they were just about this silly vampire bunny that, as far as I can remember, went around like terrorizing the city it lived in or the town that it lived in.
Kinda. Yeah.
What do you remember? I don't remember the plot at all.
They're cute. They're like kids' books about a little bunny vampire and he just like goes around and has little adventures. It's so cute. I love them.
I mean, they're like chapter books. They're not like picture books.
Yeah.
Don't get it twisted.
Yeah. Do not get confused.
What a cute like husband wife project though. I assume James and Deborah are married. I don't know, but like to write their little bunny vampire novels, so cute.
That is cute. Maybe I'm brave enough now as an adult to read them.
Yes. No, you should. Go back and read them and give us your review.
Yeah,
I will. I'll add that one to my TBR. We'll see how that goes over on Goodreads.
I feel like we can't talk about vampires and not at the very least mention Anne Rice's Interview with a Vampire, The Vampire Chronicles, Queen of the Damned. Like,
speaking of horny vampires.
Yeah. The original queen of horny vampires.
Yes.
From the 1970s. So, yeah, I have always, that was kind of one of my intros into horror as well, was Anne Rice and sort of those books at a young age, in addition to Stephen King. So I'd be remiss if we went over vampires and didn't talk about Anne Rice.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. This is my official petition to do a whole episode on vampires, please and thank you.
Yes. Yeah.
I do have, yes, absolutely. I have one more vampire rec.
Oh, yes, please.
A little bit more on the spookier side, but it is Let Me In. It's in America, it's Let the Right One In. It's kids, and it's like a vampire girl, and she makes friends with this weird little twinkie getting picked on boy, and it's a really cute. I think it's okay. I say cute. It's cute in that I like reading stories about kids making friends with each other.
Yeah, so true.
It's less cute in the like disemboweling way. And there's it starts with the body of a boy being discovered, and he has no blood. Like, he's completely a dry, empty.
Like a husk?
Yeah, like a husk. And, like, it's kind of like a revenge story on some, like, bullies and stuff, but it is, it's, I like it. And I love the movie is also, the both the movies are also quite good. There's an American version and I believe a Swedish version.
Quite ooh, good. Yeah.
It's a Swedish book. That's my pitch for a slightly scary, that actually scary-ish vampire.
We all know that Kelsey's the monster fucker of the group. And so I've been told that sometimes spooky can be sexy. So, Kelsey, tell us about times when you've been both scared and horny.
Oh, I would love to. Monsters are, in fact, very hot. Please listen to our monster fucking episode from season one. Mm-hmm. If you haven't, what is wrong with you? You two are a monster fucker. Trust me. But anyway, yes, there are. I think I, when we started this episode, I found that the most, like, my first, the first thing I thought of when I thought of spooky books was, like, the spooky monster fucking books that I've read. A few of those are, like, A Soul to Keep by Opal Rain. It's a smutty as fuck monster demon romance. It's Orpheus and his human bride, Rhea. He's, like, this creature who takes a human bride. There's a, that's, this is, like, the theme of a lot of these monster books is, like, weird, creepy creature monster wants hot human woman, and they bridge the gap of their cultures. And but yeah, that was a really fun one. It's definitely, it's that the main character is creepy that makes it, you know, demon fucking. Another with kind of like very similar vibes is Luxuria by Colette Rhodes. It's a monster omegaverse where shades feed on human fear. But instead of being scared, the character Ophelia is just really fucking horny. And apparently being horny tastes better than being scared.
Fair enough.
So they're like, no, they're like, ooh, instead of scaring the humans, we can just rile them up emotionally and be satiated.
Monsters, Inc. After Dark.
Yeah, truly. Literally. It's like literally what it was. That's really fun. I really love that book. Another that's same in like the same demon-y kind of space is Her Soul to Take by Hurley LaRoe. It's a supernatural ghost hunter who accidentally like summons a demon, and they have some pretty kinky fun times. So the things about these monster books that I think make them spooky is the themes and who like the monster character is. Like I've recommended some like very wholesome monster romances before, like Morning Glory Milking Farm is not mm-hmm. a spooky book. It just happens to be a minotaur. Whereas these wrecks are very much in the vein of like the characters are like absolutely scary. Like the men are scary, but they have a soft inside.
Is A Soul to Keep, is that the one that is like kind of similar to, there's like one anime that is like the Magus's bride or something. And it's like the like deer skull head guy.
Yes.
Similar?
Yes. Yes. Okay. It is the Duskwalker Brides series. There are a lot in the series. It was, it wasn't my favorite monster romance because he is like the definition of a himbo. Like he's barely a man.
So I would like it.
Yes. But yes, it is based on that show that's like really similar. I think it was fan fiction that she like wrote about it and then has a whole series. I literally, my review on Goodreads is the most monster of any monster book I've read. Like, it's just...
It's number
all
one.
Monster. It's most monster. Now, moving away from, like, monster sexy romance, but still sexy and spooky, I'm going to go into some, like, dark romances.
Love.
I mentioned what I'm reading right now, which is the second in Butcher and Blackbird by Bryn Weaver. Mm-hmm. That book's about two serial killers who fill in love. It's gory. It's gross. There's something that happens with ice cream that has truly haunted me to this day.
So it sounds like gore doesn't really bother you. There's like some spooky elements in books that can keep you up, but you're not, gore doesn't cross the line for you with that.
I mean, I can take it. This like literally made me feel gross. The second one has something similarly icky, and I had to like put it down and like try not to puke. So like I think I can handle it
instead of ice cream.
Yeah. There's a pizza and beer thing. And there's like a trigger warning in Butcher and Blackbird that's accidental cannibalism.
Oops.
And so it's just like, It's a whole fun time, but she does it in such a funny way, sure, that I like can stomach it, if mm-hmm. that makes sense. Yeah. And I think for me with books, like I can put it down, like pause. Crossland just asked in the chat, how do you accidentally do a cannibal? Buddy, you're gonna have to read it. You're gonna love
only
it.
Only one way to find out.
And I think the book is dedicated. It's like, if you read the triggers and said accidental cannibalism, I'm in. This one's for you. Like, I think it's funny. It's great. I love those books. I'm thrilled about them. Okay, next is another very more serial killer energy. Lovely Bad Things and Lovely Violent Things by Tricia Wolfe. It's a dark romance where the serial killer is falling for the crime scene investigator and they're solving like a case together. And the male main character is criminally insane. So very, very spooky in regard to like murder and murder mystery and killing. So you can see, like, I can get these dark themes when they're like,
yeah,
backpacked on romance. Like, I can get with it.
As long as there's happily ever
in
after.
Love. Mm-hmm. I think it's that.
That's funny.
It's really that. Just a couple more. Does It Hurt by H.D. Carlton. I think that book, if you guys remember on TikTok, it's the like fucking in shark infested waters book.
Is this the one where he holds her head underwater?
Yes, it is.
Okay, yes.
That's my
okay.
nightmare.
But I'm counting it as spooky because they get stranded on an isolated island that has a haunted lighthouse on it. The sharks are less spooky, but they are scary.
Certainly. So,
scary sharks. But yeah, those are some of the dark romance books I thought about when we were thinking of spooky themes. What about y'all? I want to know if you have any that come to mind.
Yeah, I think Anatomy. Like, it's not a dark romance, but I think that Anatomy still is, like, it's a little yucky and can make you go a little bit like, ew. And there's some, like, supernatural elements to it that you're like, oh, that's surprising that there's supernatural elements in this book about a woman wanting to be a scientist.
Yeah.
But like, there's descriptions of grave robbing that are like very visceral. So like, I think that I but it was so good. It's so good. It's so
I'm gonna
good,
read it guys. Now that you've said it. I just love the cover so much, and I've picked
it's
it up
gorgeous.
So many times.
It's a sign.
Yeah. Oh, mm-hmm.
The you've sequel is me. The sequel's cover is beautiful too. It's a brain instead of a heart.
Ooh, dope.
Would we count some classic romances as spooky romances? Like, I think about like Wuthering Heights or Jane Eyre. I would say so.
I would.
Some people might not. You would?
Yeah, I would, partially because I'm just a simp for Wuthering Heights.
Fair enough.
I think that's the book that I've read the most in my lifetime.
It's very misty.
It is very misty. Like, I love that book so much that I had heather as like a part of my wedding florals.
Oh,
like, I
yeah.
love that
oh.
book so much. It's I love it because like, it is a little spooky because there's, you know, there's like the moors and the mist and, you know, mm-hmm. they're dead. And so it's ghosts. But like, it's really just it's a love story between two of the worst people in the whole entire universe ever. And I love that book. I would count it a little bit spooky just for vibes wise.
Yeah, it at least feels autumnal.
Yeah.
Yeah. They tick the atmosphere box for sure. Like mm-hmm. they fit the vibes.
Totally, yeah, totally different vibe. And I can't believe we were remiss not to mention this in the vampire conversation. But could we count Bride by Allie Hazelwood as a spooky book? There are vampires. There are werewolves.
Ooh.
Does it count? Or does it by inherently being Omegaverse, does it take it out of the running?
I did make a spooky Omegaverse recommendation. That was Luxuria. So I think
there
Omegaverse
we go.
Can be
mentioned
spooky.
One every episode.
Perfect.
Yeah, you know.
Hell
it.
Yeah.
We're gonna have our Omegaverse episode eventually. All hail the knot. But mm-hmm. I think Bride, I would vote no for Bride. I think it's definitely paranormal, but I think it's like, I think it feels also less atmospheric mm-hmm. than Twilight even.
Yeah.
Like, I think if I were to compare them, I would consider Twilight more vibey, like spooky vibey than I would Bride. But that's just
they kind of just like just happen yeah. to be vampires and werewolves. Like, it didn't really seem that important
yeah.
to the plot until we got to more of the Omegaverse stuff, I guess. But it felt like kind of inconsequential
yeah.
What their species were.
I would agree. I don't think it was spooky. I think it was just fun that happened to be monsters. I would honestly, I counted Bride kind of similar to Morning Glory Milking Farm. Like, to me, they were very similar
sure.
reading experiences.
Yeah, I can see that.
ultimately wholesome.
Earlier, Tiff, you mentioned some spooky sci-fi. And as the other resident sci-fi girly, I've never read super spooky sci-fi. So I'm really curious what spooky sci-fi you've read.
I yelled about it in something else, and I will keep yelling about it. But I think my top series that I read this year is The Three Body Problem.
Oh, yeah.
And like, they were so incredible. Like, I read all three of them in pretty quick succession. And like the first book, it starts off like it's a little bit spooky. It's a little bit scary. It's a little bit existential. And then by the second book, it gets more so. And then the third book is even more so. So it's very like existential dread. Mm-hmm. And it was so good. They were a little scary in the way that, like, you know, anything that's like big existential crisis or like deep thinky kind of book can get. But it was handled in such like a beautiful, interesting way that I really loved it, and I want to read everything that Cixin Liu he's ever written now. Movies. I really like Alien. I love the Alien series, even the schlocky ones. I love a abandoned space station story.
Oh, sure.
Like, ooh, those are so, that atmosphere of like, why is there nobody here in this space station? What's gone wrong? Yeah. The Scourge Between the Stars was a really good one that I liked this last year. I think I read it this last year. And then, again, like, Luminous Dead, too, was good. And that is more sci-fi. But yeah, The Three Body Problem is the big one. I have been chasing the high of reading The Three Body Problem since I finished the last one over the summer. It was so, so good. It left me with the worst book hangover, though, because it was like three big, thick books in a row that I just loved, loved, loved.
Would you put like the Broken Earth trilogy by N.K. Jemisin in a similar like sci-fi spooky realm?
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Okay. I loved those.
I think so,
I felt that way after finishing that series. That was an incredible series. I don't know if it's say spooky, but like in the big existential way that you were just saying, man, the spookiest thing is our own humanity, isn't it?
Really?
Yeah.
I honestly, like, these books are on par with that series for me. Like, they gave me kind of similar feelings, and I loved the characters a similar amount, and I think that is a really good comparison.
Well, I'm having a big problem because I'm bumping everything up my TBR this episode, so it's like becoming negligible because now everything's at the top of my TBR. Yeah. God damn it, you guys.
There's also only so much time until like holiday books. Yeah. I'm like, how do I fit these all in before a holiday?
Yeah. That's the secret. Don't observe the other holidays. Don't do them.
Spooky all year.
Spooky all year, bitches. I think that part of what I like about the like abandoned space station is very similar to like why I like haunted house stories. Because like it's just the idea that like this is not a person doing something weird. This is like something else. And so I think that I really love like haunted house stories too, or just like weird house stories. Like, not necessarily haunted, but like weird and strange. And Lindsay, we've name dropped it several times, but like Mexican Gothic is the book that got me back into reading. Like, it's so
it's
good.
Incredible. I loved it. You recommended it to me a couple times, and then the cover is really pretty, so I picked it up. It was beautiful. I almost wish we'd read it for our book or so, but I think it might have been a little too spooky for some of the baddies, which totally makes sense. Yeah. But it's about, you know, there's, without spoiling anything, there's a house. It's semi-sentient. There's fungus. Also, fungus is scary as hell. I think that's the other thing with The Last of Us. Just thinking about how, like, it's not a plant, it's not an animal. What the fuck?
What the fuck is it?
Yeah.
Agree.
So scary.
And how does it eat my brain?
Exactly. How does it know what to do? Right? Like, it's just so far from human. Yeah. Anyway, so that one was really good. I don't know if I don't think counts as a house book, but Mexican Gothic made me think on and off about the subtrope of like a woman going crazy in a house, or like a psychological thrill a little bit, like Yellow Wallpaper by Charlotte Gilman, where you just like slowly watch this lady descend into madness.
Yeah. I like loving Mexican Gothic means that you should read everything else that Sylvia has ever written, because like they're all so, so good. She's so atmospheric that like I didn't even mention Silver Nitrate has Nazis in it. Like there's a Nazi cult in that book. And like you forget because like it's so atmospheric and so interesting, and you're so like tied into this world of like cinema in like Mexican cinema. Like it's so cool and so good. Yeah, I will read anything that she writes. And same with Stephen Graham Jones. Like they have their own dedicated bookshelf, like shelf in our book collection because I just love them so much.
Nice.
And she also does the like, is the woman going mad or are there other things happening that we think she's going mad, but actually she's fine and actually everything else around her is just crazy now.
I guess I didn't realize how many house books there were in Spooky Town. I just got from the library. I have not even started it, so don't ask me to say anything about it. But Masters of Death by Olivia Blake, I literally just got it, and I actually had no idea what it was about. And on the break, I read the synopsis, and it's about a house being spooky. So I'm excited. Or this house is involved. I don't know. Ooh. I think she's a realtor in the book, so we'll find out. And then we mentioned it earlier, yeah. Also Starling House by Alex Harrow. That book is almost entirely about a house, and that was a delightful read. I think that would be a good like intermediate or like dip your toes in spooky book if anyone's looking for to get into Spooky Town but not become a full on resident.
I just love Alex Harrow.
True.
Ooh, okay, well then I'll push that one up. I mean, Do Your Worst that I had mentioned is a haunted castle, and then all this talk of haunted houses has me thinking of a series I just read the third in. It's Belladonna by Adeline Grace. The third book is called Wisteria. It's about a woman who can't die, who falls in love with death. And death is really hot. It's a YA series. It's so fucking good. They solve a attempted murder and a murder mystery together. The lead character can like see spirits, and they're in this home of her uncle's home that's very much haunted. And so I was like, oh my God, yes. Like, I can't believe I didn't think of this series more recently. The third one, Wisteria, was also so lovely. It's about different characters. It's about Fate, who's also a hot man, and the human equivalent of life falling in love. It's just really interesting. It's very atmospheric too, but the house is a central aspect of it, and it is very much haunted. But yeah.
That sounds great.
But it's definitely like more intro. Yeah.
I feel like that's never been described to me in that way, and it has always been like on the periphery of something that I want to read, but the way that you are describing it makes me want to read it.
Yay!
The other, like, oh, it's kind of dark for a YA. Like, okay, cool. That's
it's not. Yeah, no, it's really beautiful. It's a really beautiful like murder mystery romance. Another one, we were talking earlier about all of the like woman kind of going crazy or like crazy women books. It made me think a lot about Gillian Flynn.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, yeah.
And some of her books. Obviously, especially Gone Girl. That's one of my favorite good for her books ever. Mm-hmm. I am team plot, like plan your murder and blame it on your shitty husband. Do it, girl. She should have gotten away with it. And she does. Good for her. I feel like that's definitely like modern spooky book. All of Gillian Flynn's.
I've been scared to read that book, not because I'm worried it'll be too scary, but because I'm worried that it runs with the Colleen Hoover crowd. Are you telling me I'm safe?
Oh, I think you're safe. I think you're really safe. And honestly, yeah, no. Way far from Colleen Hoover. It's very well written. She's a Kansas City author. So hometown, baby. Her other two books, Sharp Edges and what is the third?
Objects. I love Sharp Objects.
Thank you.
That's my favorite of her novels.
Thank you. What's her third? What's the other one? Sharp,
Dark Places.
I always want to say it's Dark Places. Something, oh, Dark Places. Yes, I always think it's the train book that I love. But
oh,
Girl on the Train.
Yes,
that's also really good. Yeah. Yeah. All of her books, genre. I really enjoyed all of them. I read them a few years ago. I was on a really big like murder or like mystery kick. Not that they're only mysteries, but like that kind of energy. Good for her books. Highly recommend. I think you'd really like them, nice. Lindsay.
Well, now I'm going to have to. God damn it. I have too many books. That sounds great. Yeah, I'm definitely going to have to read that one. It's always been like in the side of what did you say earlier? In your periphery as like a book to check out. But I never have because for whatever reason, I looped it in with the Colleen's Hoover of the world and kind of wrote it off. So I need to not do that, I guess. What the heck, Lindsay? Mary Isn't Here, our YA young adult reader extraordinaire. But I do know that there's some like spooky YA out there. Mm-hmm. And I would say like, as a kid, I read probably more like creepy crawly YA than I do as an adult, despite being someone who was terminally scared, anxious child. So I don't know. I need to like unpack that one a little bit. And I don't know how those authors like walked the line between spooky and without it being scary. But so I think about like the Spiderwick Chronicles by Tony D. DeLizzi. Did anyone read those? Those were fantastic. I love those. And they were like kind of creepy crawly. Those were great. And then Series of Unfortunate Events by Lemony Snicket, of course, like atmospheric, spooky adults not caring about you, just like being put in weird situations, very uncomfortable. I don't know. I don't know what that is about YA that lets it walk the line a bit more.
Do you want to know a fun fact about me, the person who is the spooky bitch here?
Sure do.
I read the first Series of Unfortunate Events when I was in like second grade, and it was too scary. And I didn't read them until I was grown up.
That makes sense.
I'm glad you did read them eventually.
I mean, it's like, it's a heavy hitter, right? Like, immediately the parents die. And so you're a kid and you're reading this and you're like, oh, no. I don't want my parents to die.
My parents can die.
That's super real.
Yeah. Tiff, I didn't read them until college. My bestie was like, these were one of her favorite. That was like her favorite series growing up. And I was like, okay, I'll read them. So I waited too. I waited until I was brave.
I waited until I was braver. Yeah, I read them because they're like one of Paul's very favorite series of all time. Yeah. Also, the audiobooks, a lot of the audiobooks are narrated by Tim Curry.
No way. Really?
Oh, weird.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
That's so funny and feels deeply unserious.
Yeah.
I also
like, and now like reading them, reading them as a grown up, I'm like, oh, these are not scary. I don't know what, like, picked it up at the wrong time, I think.
I can see that.
But
for
now
sure.
I have an autographed copy of The Bad Beginning now.
Nice. So. That's great. I want to see it sometime. That's really cool.
Yes.
Totally. I remember, you just unlocked a memory for me. I remember being in elementary school and like the Lemony Snicket books of the elementary school that Kelsey and I went to had this like section that you couldn't go into until you were in third or fourth grade. And I don't remember if I was in first or second, but I was like, I'd already read one or two of them because we had them at my house and I wanted to get the third one, or maybe we got it in the library. I don't remember. And I had to like get a signed paper slip from my parents and my elementary school teacher to be able to go read like the big kid books because they didn't believe me that I could. And I was like, this is so stupid.
That's really funny.
For like literature and for reading. And I'm sure Mary could probably, you know, touch on it more given her profession, but like, you shouldn't tell a kid they can't go pick up a book. That just felt so weird to me. And I was like, I'm not going to go read these stupid picture books. I want to read about these kids being depressed and orphans.
It's so fair.
give me what I want. Come on.
Give it to me.
I was wrong earlier when I said that Tet Decker was my first scary book. My first scary book was probably a Goosebumps book.
Yes. Those were too scary for me. I could not do it.
Same.
See, that's so funny that I was scared of the Series of Unfortunate Events, but I was like, Goosebumps, eat them up. They're great. 10 out of 10. Give them to me. I want 14 of these right now. Don't care what's in them. Give them all.
Those were so scary. And I remember like boys in elementary school would like take them and read them out loud. And I'd be like, this is harassment. You're unconsensually scaring me.
That's a hate crime.
I love that you talk to boys in elementary school. I was too scared to do even that.
So now that we're outside of elementary school, we have
finally
lightly, we have so much more control over our environment. So like when I was a kid reading Goosebumps in like a closet because I wanted to read them in silence. The way God intended. Now that I'm a grown up, I can kind of read how I want to read. So I'm curious how y'all like to situate yourselves when you read something that's like spooky or lightly spooky or atmospheric. We've talked a little bit about like fall. Fall is for vibe reads. And
yes.
So like I'm curious how y'all go about your scary consumption.
I think audiobook for me works really well so that I'm doing something else while I listen to it because I don't know, but I don't know about you, but I don't just like sit and stare at a wall when I'm listening to an audiobook. I'm usually driving or doing chores or, you know, some other mundane task that like I'd rather not be doing. And so if it gets spooky, I can kind of zone out a bit. Otherwise, I gotta be next to my husband, Sam. Shout out. Aww. Thanks, pal. In case I need to just like be a little grounded, just like put my hand on him and be like, I'm not actually gonna die. This is gonna be okay. I think what I'm realizing that also helps me is having another book going that's not spooky. So either like a cute romance or like a, you know, low stakes fantasy or something that doesn't require as much like mental or emotional energy for me, so that I can kind of filter out and then get prepped for the next time that I'm gonna read.
Yeah.
Yeah, same. I love being scared, but I also love not being scared. So I tend to have like a heavy book going, and also I'm so multifaceted. So I will have like a scary book and then also like a light, fluffy book that is not gonna scare me.
Mm-hmm. Well, palate cleanser, yeah.
Yeah, palate cleanser. That's totally the way to phrase it, yeah.
Yeah, for me, if I'm reading something that's really spooky, which to Tiff is like nothing, so keep that in mind, the context of where we're standing. Weenie over here. I definitely need all the lights on. Like, I'm like, I need it to be bright and I need to feel safe. But if I'm reading some of my other, like the other books I mentioned that are like spooky adjacent or like spooky monster romance or whatnot, like it's just the normal setup. Like, give me someplace cozy. Give me a warm drink. I want my like vibe lights on. Maybe a crackling fire. 8-hour loop is playing. Mm-hmm. Like,
amen.
It's they're best indulged in the fall. Like the vibes.
Oh my God, yes.
The vibes.
Mm-hmm. I absolutely. I mainly read horror or spooky in October. And so does my partner. So like, it's a thing that we just mainline that in October. Like, we save scary books throughout the year that we're like, oh, this looks really cool and I'm excited, but I know that it's going to be more fun to read it in October. So we read those through October.
Yes.
That's so cute. Do you like stockpile them?
Yeah. We have like a little, it's like a little section of our bookshelf and it's like, these are the books that we are going to read this October. And it's kind of nice to have that to look forward to. I also like to burn, fun fact, my favorite candle, shout out to Frostbeard Candles. If you want to sponsor us, please do. I buy so many of your candles.
Go for it.
I buy so many of your candles. I buy them like 5 at a time. But my favorite of theirs, there's one that is for the Night Circus called Cirque de Rêve, and it is like caramel corn smell. And then my other favorite one is called Spooky Stories, and it smells like hot chocolate and a campfire and dead leaves.
Ooh.
So good. Those are my two favorite.
Get and
I like to burn one of those two babies and get under a blanket and get scared. It's great.
That sounds incredible. Hell yeah.
Highly recommend. Frostbeard, please get at us. Please.
I have one of their candles. I just don't remember the name of it. I'll find out. But I love. It's on my bookshelf. Mm-hmm.
I have so many of them.
I need to get more, is what I'm hearing. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, now that we've got our vibes on lock, I think it's time for our least favorite part of the episode. I'm just kidding. That's so mean. It's time for Books and Daddy.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to torture Crossland. We're giving him a tiny little treat for being a good boy. And we're going to let him torture us.
Woo.
With limits and with clear guidelines and safe boundaries. Words. Boundaries are set. We told Crossland, because he's been so very good, that he gets to mansplain Stephen King to us.
The lesser of the Stephen King horror authors.
I wish you could all see his face right now. He is so full of joy. You look like a little kid that just got
so much shit to go through so quickly.
You look like a little kid. Yeah, we haven't just got like a puppy.
You only get 2 minutes. That's the thing. And we're going to actually mute your mic at exactly 2 minutes. Do we have the ability to do that with the tools that we have? No, we don't.
We don't, but Steven does.
It's like, who edits this?
Just make a really loud buzzer sound.
We're going to have to, in fix it in post. If you go over 2 minutes, we're going to punish you and put you in a timeout. We know you like that, so we'll make it spooky so that you don't. All right, Lindsay's going to pull up the timer. Crossland, I hope you're ready. You were in speech, right?
Yeah, actually, so extemporaneous speaking as well. And I know time limits. So I know this whole thing.
I can tell.
You're going to do so good. Stop. You're going to do so good.
Hold on, I have to pick. What's the most annoying Apple alarm sound?
How many times have you practiced this?
I actually completely cut it and changed it while we've been going through the episode. So.
Oh, my God. I also love that our, like...
Zero.
I like that our prep for you is longer than the amount of time we're going to give you to talk about it.
Yeah, we let you know this.
Annoying enough.
2 days ago?
Yeah. Yeah, it was like 2 days ago. I was going to do like a whole side bit that I had already recorded once and like make it kind of like a fun little bit, making fun of Neil Gaiman, but I didn't do that. Instead, I have something else.
You sure?
Yep.
It's your time to shine. Don't mess it up.
Positive. Yep.
All right. Mm-hmm. 3, 2, 1.
All right, so if you know anything about me, you know that I have an adoration for horror that stretches well beyond all of the things that I've ever covered on any of the podcasts that we've talked about. I think part of the reason that horror is so important, so fundamental, and why Stephen King, I think, is an excellent horror writer, but many of the horror writers that we've been talking about today, is that horror often shows us the worst of society, but it also shows us how stark an absence of those values helps remember that they keep us from becoming monsters, that we ourselves can do better and can aspire to better. They're hopeful in the same way that a lot of fantasy stories are and generally end in more positive tones. Not all, but most kind of give us that sort of picture. And the appeal of King in many ways is making the unmanageable manageable. In addition, like it's been mentioned a couple of times on this very episode, horror is a means to explore so many themes that other genres have trouble accessing in the same fashion. A lot of fiction that we've brought up here is especially in like horror, especially is about discovering sexuality and who they were very early on. You can hear that with directors. You can hear about so many different things. The gothic horror genre as a whole was a way for men to explore sexuality in ways that they had never done in the past. I mean, if you're staring at you, Dracula. Recommendations for weenies. Clive Barker has a couple of books here. He's got Mr. Be Gone and The Thief of Always. Those are your weenie books. The Great and Secret Show is another wonderful one from King himself. My favorite is Revival, followed by The Long Walk. Most of his short stories are excellent. I would be remiss if I didn't mention The Dark Tower. Chuck Wendig has The Book of Accidents and Wanderers. Anne Rice has Queen of the Damned and The Mayfair Witches, both of which are larger series that I recommend. Chuck Palahniuk has Haunted and The Invention of Sound. Stephen Baxter has The Xeelee Sequence, but especially The Ring and Destiny's Children, which are sort of separate books inside of there. And if you want to be scared by something that's nonfiction, read The Gulag Archipelago by Alexander Solzhenitsyn.
You're under time. Good job. Got 10 seconds left.
You did that so fast, and I was like mesmerized by your speed that I was like going to prepare questions after your whole bit, and I just like nothing has been retained by any of that.
Truly, if I was to be put into a room and was like write an essay on something that would take 3 hours for people to consume, I would do it on horror first and foremost.
So we're really cruel for giving you 2 minutes. Well done.
I did the best that I could in the time that was allotted.
That was amazing.
Yeah, you did. So good.
Well, thank you, Jocelyn. We're very proud of you. I'm glad your high school speech prowess hasn't failed you in adulthood.
Really showed up, yeah. Not like I haven't transferred that into other skills and or grown maybe as a person.
No, you don't run a podcast at all. No, it's
a
just speech.
Dozen of years. Okay, yeah.
1/100 in our hearts. That one was for the speech kids.
4/1/100s.
Well, hey, everyone, thanks for hanging out. Thanks for getting spooky with us. Thanks for just vibing. Whether you are a Kelsey who gets scared of your own shadow or you're a Tiff who wants it as spooky as you can get. We've had a lot of fun today, you know, just chatting spooky shit with all y'all. If you have any suggestions, please reach out to us. But baddies, before we wrap it up so people can go add all these books to their Goodreads like we just did, I'm curious. Rest in peace. You're dead. You're a ghost. Where are you haunting? What are you haunting?
I know what I'm haunting. I am haunting all of you.
Shut the fuck up.
Shut the hell up. Oh my God.
Fair enough.
We're all too far away.
I'm haunting my actual answer. I'm haunting every male duo podcaster's microphone with just the slightest hum that they can't get rid of.
Hell yeah. That's good, Cross. That's really good. Fuck. Honestly, and I say this with my full chest, I would love to haunt a crusty old sex shop. I just like imagine the people watching. Like, just think about the characters in that store. I think I would just like make a home on one of the giant dildos with like an inch of dust and just like jump out at anyone who giggles.
Like the one that's in the shop that they know no one's gonna buy, but it's like a staple of the, the community. Yeah.
And like the paper part of whatever the box is like so obviously faded from years of sun damage. And it's just like been sitting there.
It's like a biohazard at this point. Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, those ones are way more creative than what first came to my mind, because you know what, the thing that I thought was like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And I think I'd just lean into being like your stereotypical ghost, like maybe throw a little sheet over my head with two little eye holes that I could look out of just to like prove that the original ghost isn't dead. Just like go to a graveyard, your nearest graveyard, your community graveyard, prank the kids who hang out there as they're like trying to smoke little cigarettes and be cool or vape or whatever it is they do now, and then like actually freak them out and be like, save your lungs, kids. That's how I died. Or like really, I don't know,
your community service ghost.
Yeah, there you go. Or like really rev it up around Halloween and like find the house that's like trying to go all out with the inflatable Halloween decor and just make it a little bit spookier so they like feel extra special, wistfully appear in your peripheral vision. Just the classics. I don't know.
I think that mine is a little bit of like a tie between your two. I want to haunt a mall. I think that it'd be funny to be like a mall rat ghost.
Yes.
Like, I'll live in the Spirit Halloween location forever. Mm-hmm. And I'll make it scary year round.
Love it.
As like kids break into it to try to smoke. And I'll also offer like, exactly. And I'll offer unsolicited advice to people who are shopping, and I will slip things into people's bags as they are leaving, and it will be just a little poltergeist and a little annoying asshole. It'll be great.
Cute. That's so cute.
I love that.
Yeah, I can like do summers at the Spencers in your mall.
Oh, cute. Hell yeah. Each other. You can all hang out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Come visit. Yeah. And the mall is right next to a cemetery, so we can hang out.
Yeah, it's too. Perfect.
And we figured it out.
Podcasters are definitely in that cemetery. Don't worry about it.
Oh, podcasters aren't leaving.
They're coming to the mall. They're coming to the mall to go to the Best Buy.
Or Spencer's.
Because their microphones keep making weird noises and they need to replace them.
It's true. That's true. They keep getting new microphones and they're like, what the fuck is happening?
All right. Good job, baddies. I think we can call this one. We've done good, scary work here. Thank you, of course, as always, to our podcast dad, Cross of Words and Whiskey, for keeping us on track, sort of. And as well as our editor, Steven, for making us sound just as pretty as we look.
Elite Steven.
Yay.
Also, check out all of our links in the show notes. You can find our schedule, our Patreon, previous episodes, all the important socials, all in one convenient, spooky graveyard spot. Remember, hotties can read whatever they want, so chase your bliss, baby baddies.
Bye. Halloween is out.